roasting coffee daily at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Also offering a variety of tea and chai. Open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:15 p.m. and Saturday mornings from 9 to noon. More information is available at 352-9713.
Well, the dry and cool weather will be with us one more day. The chance for rain will increase as we approach the end of the work week, and it will also be with us into the weekend as a large and slow-moving storm system approaches from the west. A southerly wind ahead of this system will bring warmer air back into the Midwest as we wrap up the second week of April. High temperatures today will reach the mid-50s to mid-60s across the Midwest. Low temperatures tonight will range from the mid-30s in northeastern Indiana to the low 50s in western Missouri. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, sunny with a high of 62, the wind from the south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy, not as cool. We'll see a low around 40. The wind will be out of the southeast from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy and breezy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the high 65. The wind from the south at 15 to 20 with gusts to 30 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy and warmer with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, the low 55. The wind will be out of the south around 15 with gusts to 25 miles per hour. Saturday, showers and thunderstorms are likely, and it will be breezy. Look for a high in the low 70s with the wind from the southwest at 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts to 30. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms and a low in the low 60s. Sunday, showers and thunderstorms are likely. We'll see a high in the mid-70s. At noon central time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana in a narrow range from the mid to upper 50s. At Rockford, O'Hare, and Bloomington, 57 degrees. At Mattoon and Carbondale, 56. Also 56 at Lafayette. South Bend checked in with 54 degrees. Indianapolis, 56. Terre Haute, 58. Willard Airport reported 56 at the top of the hour. The sky sunny. The dew point, 26. The relative humidity, 31%. The barometer, 30.25 and falling. And the wind, light and variable. At 1240, 55 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. It's a machine that changed communication. It helped create mass communication. It sped communication. It also led to an increase in literacy. Thomas Edison called it the eighth wonder of the world. It had a run of about 100 years. Today, it is largely forgotten. This is the story of Linotype. It is a story told in a new documentary directed by Doug Wilson. The title, Linotype. The film. The film will have a one-night-only premiere in Champaign this evening, April 12th at 8 o'clock at Parkland College. A panel discussion will follow. It will be presented by the graphic design program at Parkland, and proceeds will benefit Parkland College's Fine and Applied Arts Department. Professor Paul Young heads the graphic design program at Parkland. I asked him to describe the Linotype machine.
Linotype, just as the name implies, spits out a line of type at a time. This may seem not like a big deal these days. Back in the days of letterpress printing, type had to be set one character at a time. For a machine to have a keyboard attached and for a person operator to be able to type on a keyboard and have the machine do all the work behind the scenes, grabbing the metal type, setting it in place, justifying the type so it's even on the column on the left and right-hand side, then pour molten lead into the matrices and spit out one line of hot type. That was a miracle. The second part of that miracle, amazingly, is it used to be when you are done setting type in the days of metal letterpress printing, you had to have the type taken apart and resorted and put it back in the case. This machine automatically takes all the metal brass type elements and sorts it by itself automatically, just with gears and levers and pure mechanics, no digital technology. and puts all the type back in place and prepares the machine for the next line of type. When I first saw this machine for the first time in operation, I had tears in my eyes. I couldn't believe the genius and the mechanics of how the machine, how the inventor figured out how to make this happen.
Why did it revolutionize communication and culture?
Speed. Back in the day, when type was said one character at a time, you can't print very many books because it takes a very long time to typeset individual lines, individual pages, and then to print the book. And the line of time machine sped up the process, and I think the film documents this as 6 times the speed of a single person. So the linotype would do the job of 6 people, or in 1/6 of the time of a person typesetting manually. This increase in speed allowed newspapers to print more pages, more editions, allowed more newspapers to be published, and of course also revolutionized book printing. And because more newspapers are available and they were cheaper and more books were being able to be published, the end result is literacy level increased.
Is there a particular facet of the film that most appeals to you?
I guess it's the people interviewed who operated the machine. They have a connection with this machine that you and I may not have with our computers. Sure, we like our computers and we like our iPads and now smartphones, etc., but not with the passion that these linotype operators have with their machine. There's something about the ability to touch the machine, the smell, the sounds, the fact that it even spits out hot lead, the fact that it's completely mechanical, it's non-digital, and the fact that it has to be maintained very carefully and calibrated to do its job well. And operators who operate these machines had to train for years to become experts at this. And for them, it was a lifetime career to master the art of operating a linotype machine. So I can imagine, you know, the kind of connection that a man and a machine could make. So in the film, when these people, linotype operators, and there aren't that many left anymore, as you can imagine, this is these people are in their 80s, perhaps even 90s. When they're interviewed, you can sense, okay, the passion they have for the machine. They're very, very saddened that the fact that linotype is no longer in operation and it has no place in today's world of graphic arts.
Now, today there are a few younger people who are interested in linotype. Why are they interested, and what is it about the memory of this process of printing that they think is worth preserving?
Well, for people like me, graphic designers who work on computers all the time, we don't get to touch anything when we create a logo or a brochure or a magazine or a book or even lay out a newspaper. It's all behind this glass wall, and there's something very abstract about seeing it on a computer monitor. It isn't until the finished product comes off the printing press that you get to touch the book, flip through its pages, or smell the ink of the newspaper even, that the object you created becomes real. I think people who work in the digital world today miss that creativity that comes with making things with your hands. And so I guess today, all these antique printing technologies, including wood type as well as the linotype, have a very nostalgic quality to them. It's somehow romantic to think back in those days of fine craftsmanship when life was slower and you took care in everything that you do, where today everything appears to be rush, rush, rush. Time has just sped up so much these days. There are also a group of people, I think, that like the linotype specifically because it is a very miraculous machine. It is a very heavy machine. It takes half a room to set it up, and it's such a specialized machine that it's hard to really pin down. I think people like the uniqueness of the Linotype because there's no other machine in the world quite like it.
You know, the Linotype in its day was all about speed, as you mentioned. I'm wondering, did it make contributions to graphic design?
Actually, it did. The Linotype Corporation was very profitable, as you can imagine. They had a patent on this machine. There were hundreds of thousands of machines operating all over the world. And the goals of the corporation, the visionaries behind Linotype, the corporation, was to make excellent typography. And by excellent typography in their minds, and even so today, is to make type invisible, so that when you're reading a newspaper or magazine, you're not aware of the shapes of letter forms. So you're really only aware of the content of what you're reading, the story that you're reading, not the shape of letter forms that your eyes are absorbing. And they spent an enormous time of energy, money, investment, and they hired some, you know, very highly qualified, highly skilled type designers to draw letter forms and design type in such a way so it is an effortless, beautiful, seamless reading experience. Yes, they designed the type to be cast in metal using the Linotype machine, but the original drawings are still used today. So even though Linotype machine is no longer a viable production process today, Linotype, the corporation, which is now owned by a German company, headquarters in Germany, still publishes type, but they publish it digitally. And they own some of the best typefaces in the world. For example, Helvetica, a very common typeface. Well, guess who owns Helvetica? Linotype does.
And finally, Paul, what do you hope your students will take from the film?
Well, one, I do hope they appreciate the long history of graphic design and graphic arts technology has, and to be able to say, I am part of a very proud lineage. Even today, I may be working on an Apple Macintosh using programs like Photoshop. None of this could have existed if there weren't inventions and clever ways to use technology, even though it's not digital technology, back in the days of metal typesetting, and even going further back to the days of Gutenberg, just the idea of being able to mass produce books was a crazy idea, you know, before Gutenberg came along, because scribes have to copy books by hand, one page at a time. So that's the heritage that we come from. And often we forget that, and I think students and everyone else should appreciate all the innovations that have come before us.
Paul Young heads the graphic design program at Parkland College in Champaign. Doug Wilson's documentary, Linotype, the film, will be screened this evening, April 12th, at Parkland. A panel discussion, including the director, will follow. The donation at the door is $7, with proceeds benefiting Parkland's Fine and Applied Arts Department. And I will tell you, the film is terrific. So if you have a chance to head out to Parkland tonight to see that and to make a donation to the Fine and Applied Arts Department there at Parkland, it's worth your while.
WILL programs are made possible by Hendrick House at Green and Lincoln, three blocks from the Engineering Quad. Hendrick House Catering can tailor a menu and price for events from corporate box lunches to weddings, business meetings, and other special events. More information is available at 365-8004.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 12th of April, 2012. It's the birthday of the writer John Krakauer, born in Brookline, Massachusetts, 1954. Raised in Oregon, where he took up mountain climbing, worked as a carpenter and worked as a commercial salmon fisherman to support his climbing habit. And after he'd done three climbs up in Alaska, he was asked to write an article about it, and he did, and that got him into magazine writing. In 1993, he got an assignment from Outside magazine to write about a young man who'd graduated from college, changed his name, left his family, his savings behind, and walked into the Alaskan wilderness to make a new life out there and perished 4 months later. and that became his first book, Into the Wild. It became a bestseller in 1996 and was later made into a movie. The year that book was published, Krakauer was assigned by Outside to climb Mount Everest and write an article about the commercialization of climbing. But a blizzard struck during the climb, and 8 of the 23 people in the group died. Krakauer kept detailed notes. He reached the summit, sleep-deprived, oxygen-deprived, came back, wrote an article about it, and then a book called Into Thin Air. Gustave Flaubert's first novel, Madame Bovary, was published on this day, 1857, about a woman who takes on multiple affairs to stave off the boredom of her empty existence. The novel caught the attention of the authorities, and Flaubert was charged with corrupting public